Bergeron here, just trying to get...
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron, just waiting out the tornado. There he is. Yes, I already introduced myself. You didn't even get the call, just went straight to voicemail, huh? How do you like all that rain down there, huh?
Thankfully, my dad had gotten back from vacation, and he was at the house, and the basement had just some trickling in a little bit of a flood. He was able to throw the pump on. If nobody was there, my whole basement would have been submerged.
Yeah.
I would have lost such things as my Marciano program, the original, the ticket, newspaper articles, a bunch of fight posters. Yeah, a bunch of really good stuff, and I would have been upset.
Right. Well, good thing that did happen. Anyway, we got Randall, the Knockout King Bailey, on tonight's broadcast. And he's going to be going up against a guy with a 22-0 record with 20 knockouts. Junior.
Randy fighting a guy? 22-0, 20 knockouts?
Yep, fighting for the, I think, USBA welterweight title. That is, let's check for a second here, June 7th in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it's Frederick Lawson, 22-0, 20 knockouts.
You got to see one of the knockouts in person back in 2002 in the WBA.
Right.
So
and,
we're talking about that.
One of the fights I'll always remember him for is when he literally floored
El Gato?
Francisco, yeah, El Gato.
Yeah.
Figueroa.
El Gato, you just lifted him off his feet.
That was a straight right hand, if I remember correctly, in the fourth.
You did? That's right, it was a straight right hand. He put El Gato about 5 feet, you know, in the air.
And I don't know if that was the eliminator or... He just got the opportunity after that, but he ended up going for the IBF light welterweight title the very next fight and ended up getting TKO'd in the 11th round there. So
that's
his last title opportunity until actually he fought Mike Jones
in
2012, beat Mike Jones when he was undefeated at 26-0 by another 11th round knockout.
And I know I know Mike Jones. In fact, I was talking to Mike only a matter of months before that fight. And if anybody remembers it, what happened there is Bailey came out swinging. And Jones got scared. I mean, the first Bailey shot a punch at him in like the first round, went over his head. And maybe like the breeze of the punch scared him. Because Mike Jones is fighting like tentative as hell. And then finally, Mike Jones was ahead in a very uneventful fight. So he tried to stand toe to toe with him and didn't work out too well. Bailey dropped him at the end of the 10th and destroyed him at the next 10th and 11th.
We got him coming up at 8:30, so we'll talk all about that stuff and more, sure. As far as his opponent goes, doesn't have a very impressive record. Most of those knockouts were against guys with no wins, actually. If you look at his record. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 so far here. 9, 10, 11, 12 fights against people with zero wins.
Wow, that's not good.
So that's pretty, that's not good. That's what you call grooming a fighter, I guess. And actually, the last time he had one was 5 fights ago was the last time he boxed a guy with no wins, 0-4, over in Ghana. Yes, he must be from Ghana because most of his fights are from there. So he actually had his very first USA fight this March. Mark 22, he fought Muhammad Kayango, his best opponent to date. He was 17-3-1, and he had, got a TKO in the sixth round. It's Frederick Lawson. But we'll chat more about that a little bit later. We got Psychic Tom on the broadcast. Just joined us. Welcome.
You know, Rich, I think maybe you were being a little too harsh on this guy. Because if I was his manager, there's an old cliche. Hey, come on, who do you want him to learn against? King Kong? Right? you gotta bring him along just at the right pace. Well,
he's fighting for the USBA welterweight title and he's from Ghana.
Well, I think that says a lot about where to put your money on this one. We've seen this many times, but I did hear that phrase years ago that there was a rap on someone about that, that it'd been nothing but fights like that as his fighter came up. And then his manager got all indignant. Hey, who do you expect him to learn against, King Kong? So
right.
We'll see what happens.
He fought in 2013, July of 2013, and won the vacant IBF International welterweight title. I don't know why that's not on the line in this fight. Wasn't on the line in his next fight. Or the one, or this one. So, it was just two fights ago. What's wrong with that? But apparently, maybe it's got to be an international fight to... Well, we got plenty of other stuff to cover. I don't even know where to start. We have so much stuff to cover. Obviously, big fight this weekend. Floyd Mayweather versus Marcos Maidana. Just had the privilege of watching all access shows leading up to that fight, and I found it very interesting the contrast between where these two guys live. Pretty severe, I'd say. Floyd Mayweather likes to ride around in his Bentleys and Bugattis, literally million-dollar cars, and Maidana prefers real horsepower.
At least he had his dogs with him. You know, at least he had his dogs with him. You know, this is the idea of hope springing eternal, because the guys that put this stuff together really know which buttons to push. And I'm watching it kind of skeptical, and then I keep thinking, well, is there a chance we're going to see a competitive fight? And then on YouTube, I could read a few of the comments, and it's like, well, it kind of brings me down to earth. But maybe you guys can pump it up a little bit here for me.
Well, here's what I've seen, and I've seen this in the all-access shows. They're trying to, build Maidana up as, but they showed him in the one episode, swimming and racing and training with a couple of featherweights. At 126 pounds, and with the idea that he's trying to keep up with them to be able to keep up with Mayweather's speed. But there's a difference in running with somebody at 126 pounds and competing in a boxing match with Mayweather. Now, what I think Mayweather, I've always said this with regard to Mayweather, if you have a big jab, you need to jab him to the point of his left shoulder, his lead shoulder, but not on the outside, on the inside, where the shoulder meets the chest bone, or the pectoral muscle. Because if you jab him there, it does a couple things. Number one, it hurts. It hurts, I know, because people have done it to me, and I've done it to opponents. My trainer used to make me do that. He used to jab him right there. It throws off your jab, for one. It physically hurts. And it also saves up the timing of the right hand. Now, just imagine right now, even if sitting in your seat, just get to your right hand, and at the same time, push yourself right that area. And it throws you off. You can't really step into that punch. So that's one thing I've always recommended you guys do. The only guy that really did with success, I remember, was Oscar De La Hoya and Paige Scott. With Maidana, what I would recommend that he do is, because I don't really see Maidana having a great jab. I don't remember him having a great jab. I see him as a very tough fighter, a very strong fighter, a very physical fighter, who sometimes will get dirty. You know, he has no qualms about breaking the rules or bending the rules. But he's going to put a lot of pressure on him. Now, I've seen guys try to put pressure on and get neutralized. What I think needs to be done, Mayweather is the master of the shoulder roll. Everybody knows that. But what guys don't do is they need to go with one punch at a time and try to smother him. I would kind of soft my hand and get him into the roll. But throw it soft so you don't overcommit and open up for a counter. Throw it soft, get him to roll, and then he kind of turns his body completely away from you. Sweep the left hook all the way around his side, which is a big right in his helicopter, into his chest, into his sternum. That's what I think you got to do. And you can, if you're throwing two punches, you can land one. I'm fine with that. You're going to have to, I mean, you got to be physical, but at the same point, not Victor Ortiz throwing headbutts and then trying to make Mickey huggy huggy. No. I think McDonald would do some similar thing to that, but instead of trying to do a hug and a kiss, I'd also do a shoulder him right back in the mouth. I just do not see McDonald being consistent enough with his,
You know, Tony, just I like the strategy because if you're headhunting too much, forget about it. I mean, that's just pretty much of a lost cause. And it's not the kind of
–
yeah, exactly. And it's not the kind of fight that I think Maidana is, could even think possibly of going in there and getting an early stoppage. I think if he has any chance at all, he's just going to have to grind him down and wear him down, and I think that's a darn good way to do it. So we'll see if he can execute it. Assuming
yeah,
he goes that way.
I think this is a Dana Hoya fight, and Dana Hoya is actually doing it. Tom, if you go back, and I'll have to send it to you sometime, the first preview I ever wrote was Dana Hoya Mayweather, and I was 0-1. Because I took Dana Hoya by stoppage, the 11th round. But if you look at the first 8 rounds, it was literally 2-2. 2-2. And then Dana Hoya stopped in round 9. So in my mind, and I guess this is even kind of foolish, I think Dana Hoya can really keep it up, kind of like he did against Fernando Vargas, and not like when he kind of ran out of gas against the guys of Trinidad and Shane Mosley in their second fight. So that was me, I guess, blinding myself to Dana Hoya's patterns of the past. So he could keep it up, but he did not.
Well, I just actually watched about half of the Maidana versus Broner fight. And I really think that that fight had a lot to do with Floyd picking Maidana because here's a guy in Broner who imitates Floyd, not too well, mind you, but, you know, sort of does the shoulder roll a lot like Floyd, just not as good. And I noticed during that fight that specifically in the third round when Broner had probably one of his best moments of the whole fight, I think, he was using that shoulder roll a lot like Floyd, and it was working. And he actually didn't throw half as many punches as Floyd would throw in that situation. So he left himself open to an attack from Maidana that Floyd is never going to allow. And it's really became, you know, one punch at a time for Broner and, you know, obviously trying to dig himself out of a hole since he was losing just about every round. But one thing I did notice is when his defense was working, he wasn't throwing the jab at all, really. Well, you know, he was obviously throwing some, but just wasn't using it to set up punches. And, you know, Floyd obviously loves the jab. It's what helps him, you know, be able to use that shoulder roll and not have to, you know, to knock people out. He can win by decision. So I think that's going to happen here. And another thing I noticed is that Maidana is a very sloppy puncher. Now, he's got bombs with those hooks and stuff, but he comes in looking straight down at the ground sometimes and just wing shots. And Floyd loves to tear people up like that when they have that kind of style. So I would think definitely it's going to be a decision. And Maidana will probably try to really, you know, hurt Floyd and try to knock him out, knowing that, you know, that's literally Floyd's hometown there in Vegas. So there's no way he's going to you know, drop a decision there. Even if he does slightly worse than expected, I think he's got what it takes. I would really be surprised if it not if it ended up by not.
You know, Rich. Yeah, and it comes down to this too, that there's only so much time to change a fighter's style, and I'm sure Robert Garcia's come up with a lot of these ideas. But it kind of reminds me of last night's Ultimate Fighter episode, that Frankie Edgar saying, "Well, we've noticed the mistakes this guy's made, and we're really working on him." Well, the time to be working on him is not a week before the fight. And I would say in this case, it's going to be sure be an uphill battle.
Right. So I definitely like Mayweather in this one. You know, some interesting undercard bouts. We've got Luis Collazo versus Amir Khan, who is actually Amir Khan is possibly going to be Floyd's next opponent before Maidana became the fan favorite there. So I'm looking forward to that one. Leon Love is going to be on the card. He was on that last episode that I saw of All Access. I don't have a full card in front of me, but let me get that up. Second here. We'll go over that. While we're waiting, I might as well go over the card I do have in front of me, which is UFC 172 card. John Jones had a hell of a performance against Glover Teixeira. Teixeira just looked like a beaten fighter after round one. Just really didn't have much to respond. John Jones is just getting better and better, I think. His kicking style and his elbows, it's just stands apart from any other fighter in mixed martial arts, the way he strings all that stuff together. Something I really was not sure I saw as much of in his past fights was his oblique kicks, they're called, where he kind of turns his foot to the side and kicks you in the shin rather than trying to throw a leg kick like Anderson Silva and turn your leg into a rubber chicken. So, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons why he broke his toe in the Chael Sonnen fight there, but that's
I think at least we have to give Glover credit for hanging in there, because if you remember what I said about it, I felt it was going to go to a decision. I just didn't think Jones would stop him, but I would agree with you. After the first round, that was the handwriting was on the wall. Really, the only controversy that was raised about it was this eye poke situation, which Dana said he's going to do something about, but I don't know what he plans on doing about it. But
well, that's interesting, because I just read an article like 2 hours ago about that, and John Hackelman, who trained Glover Teixeira and also trained Chuck Liddell, he came out and said that he has no problem with Jones being a dirty fighter or whatever because of the eye pokes. He sees it as a problem with the gloves themselves. But I just extend your fingers like that. But I point to Nick Diaz, and he had pretty much the same style with Stockton slap, you know, trying to set up punches by sticking his fingers out there. And it's also actually dates back to Rocky Marciano. If you watch the Rocky Marciano versus Jersey Joe Walcott knockout, specifically, there's a whole story behind how Rocky had his style aligned with a cat, actually, a literal cat. Charlie Goldman, when he was training Rocky, brought in a cat, a house cat, to the table where they were having dinner or something, and he's playing with him with a string, and the cat is gauging his shots by basically throwing jabs, basically, at the pawing jabs. That's why they call it a pawing jab. And, Rocky was watching that. Charlie said, that's what you got to do. Rocky did that a lot. You can see it, where he kind of hesitates to throw a jab, doesn't really connect with it, pulls it back, and then, boom, there goes the right hand. So John Jones is just doing that in the MMA style, and there's nothing wrong with that except for the fact that your fingers aren't covered. It's not like he's trying to poke people in the eye. I mean, he's not doing the Three Stooges, two fingers. So I don't see a problem with it either. It's just his style, and you gotta be better at defense and knocking those hands away if you're a guy like Glover Teixeira. And you know, that was another problem why he lost that fight, because he couldn't find his range. You got to duck under those arms and those kicks. You got to get on the inside with a guy like that.
Well, but even when Glover got in close, Jones was good on the inside too. I think he dominated him there. So what could Glover have done? You know, it's just a bad matchup for him.
And then we had former guest of ours and former UFC guy Anthony Johnson making his return. Against Phil Davis, who was very cocky leading up to this fight. Obviously, we talked about this last week, how he was looking past John Jones. Anthony Johnson came in there. I said this on a comment on Facebook yesterday. He looked like a Clydesdale at war with a pony. Phil's a big guy, but Anthony dwarfed him in size. I mean, you talk about going up in weight. He looked like his whole bone structure changed.
Yeah, you have to wonder how he ever made 170. And I have to congratulate you on this one, Rich. You called this to a T.
Well, I like Johnson. I think he works hard, and I think he was really intent on earning this win.
And again, how often have we seen fighters start to talk about their fight after they're the one coming up? I mean, the old cliche is the most important fight you have is the one you have to deal with immediately. Don't worry about your next one. And Phil Davis just kept talking about John Jones. Well,
right.
You know, Phil, hello, let's get past Anthony first. I mean, we've seen this for so long that guys just can't seem to focus on what's ahead of them, and there's a lot of funny things that can go wrong. A lot of detours.
He didn't even come to terms with the past, never mind the future, because after the fight with Lyoto Machida, he's up there at the podium at the press conference afterwards saying that he won the fight, and he doesn't understand why people are bitching. Well, you know, you got to eat a little humble pie there, buddy, or you're not going to improve.
I mean, but the whole thing is, that's in the past. That's over with. You got one, you've got to win each fight. That's the main goal. George Chevalo, one of my favorite heavyweights, George Chevalo's comment was, you're only as good as your last fight. Put it behind you. And
right.
Then you win, and then you're right back in the mix again. But, yeah, you're right. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that he was very defensive about the past as well as where he was going. So, bad lack of focus. I mean, we'll see if he can change.
My old wrestling coach told us once after a pretty tough loss, team loss, he said, you know, I'd rather you guys lose and learn something than win and learn nothing. So I think Phil won and learned nothing this last fight, unfortunately. But I'm sure he'll still be in the picture. He'll still be around. He's got a marketable name, and, you know, he's obviously talented. You know, I don't necessarily think his style is at all entertaining, and I thought that his last few fights and, you know, his wins were pretty much mostly because of his wrestling. And Anthony Johnson pretty much made that a non-factor.
Right. See, that's the key. And that, to me, is what's so intriguing if down the road Johnson ever gets the chance at John Jones.
Right.
I think that'll be fascinating. But, yeah, he was able to shut down Phil's wrestling, so Phil may be evolving into a gatekeeper role. It's too soon to say that, but I would agree with you.
And then we had Tim Kennedy. We had a big fight there. Actually, no, Luke Rockhold. Tim Kennedy was a few weeks ago. Luke Rockhold is his buddy of Tim Kennedy, I think, but he fought Tim Boach in a fight I thought would go a little longer, but it ended 2 minutes in, 2 minutes and 8 seconds into the first round. And Luke actually, it's pretty fair to say he wrapped him up in quite the pretzel. The submission was by inverted triangle Kimura, which I don't think I've ever seen before. Yeah, I've seen inverted triangles because actually I saw one fight down in Plymouth, Massachusetts, where one guy had a regular triangle and the other guy had the inverted triangle on the other dude at the same time. which was, I thought, impossible until that point.
Well, Rockhold is just so impressive. I can't say enough about him.
And we had another first-round choke with Yancy Medeiros getting taken out by Jim Miller. Jim Miller's getting back on the winning track there. He ended it with a guillotine choke, 3 minutes and 18 seconds into the first round. And it was a night of chokes because we had another guillotine choke with Max Holloway beating Andre Feely. That took 3 rounds, 3:39 of the third round. So when that one went down, we had Joseph Benavidez got his own guillotine choke. He actually ended up, I think, getting the performance of the night bonus for this one. That was with 52 seconds left in the first round. He got that choke against Tim Elliott. Isaac Valley Flag lost a very technical fight to Takanori Gomi, who was very sharp, looked really good. And I actually had no idea, but he's got some alcohol struggles that he talked about after his fight. He needs to lock it down and get away from it so he can put his shit together and get the title. So that was obviously a very impressive fight for him. He looks pretty good. Isaac Valley Flag is not a world beater, but he came to fight and he tried to win, but Gomi just was way better technically. It looks like a lot more striking for him. Hang on, Tom. Can you discuss some of these other fights here if you got them in front of you? Danny Castillo versus Charlie Brenneman and Chris Beal versus Patrick Williams. I got to run and get the door here.
Yeah, Castillo was a very dominant performance, and I think that if Charlie's going to continue, he's going to have to work on his stand-up game a lot, because it seems like he would start to strike and start to try to make a fight on the feet, but then he just knew he just didn't have it. Just wasn't smooth. He wasn't comfortable on his feet, so he was shooting in, but got to the point that Castillo just was timing everything perfect. So I'd say Charlie really needs a boxing coach if he's going to keep going. So we'll see where he ends up. And aside from that, I don't have the other ones in front of me. So I'm not.
All right, we're back.
Yeah. So like I was just mentioning that Charlie really was a little too one-dimensional, Charlie Brenneman. He would start to exchange a bit and just felt that he was just not, he did not seem comfortable to me on the feet at all. And it just got to the point he was being timed when he was trying to take it and take it down, so he's going to have to really work on that stand-up game if he's going to stick with it. It was a very brutal knockout.
All right, well, as I mentioned, we got run down the I thought that was interesting, though, the all-access show that I saw where the crowd at the Fatburger there were Floyd was razzing him about Manny. He shot back something about, what is he coming at me talking about a $6 billion fighter for? I said Amir Khan versus Luis Collazo. That's the second fight on the card. This is the co-main event. That's for the vacant WBC Silver Welterweight title and the WBA International Welterweight title. Amir Khan's 28-3 with 19 knockouts. Collazo's 35-5 with 18 knockouts. Leon Love is 17-0 with 10 knockouts. He's fighting Marco Antonio Parabon. Got 20 wins, 1 loss, and 1 draw, 13 knockouts. Adrian Broner, he's back trying to get back on the winning track. He's 27-1. That one loss to Donna, 22 knockouts. He's fighting Carlos Molina, 17-1-1, 7 knockouts. And
discussing the other day, how will Broner respond to that first defeat? Do you think some of the guys have their first defeat and they actually become better fighters? I think Sugar and Larry is trying to get to that. And I told But he took that first ball to the Rams, and he became a smarter, better fighter. You would take other fighters that they had that first loss, and they really, really slipped. I'm going to give you a prime example. Now, obviously, these fighters didn't have the same natural talent that Broner has. But this is just a few years ago. Anybody remember Edison Miranda?
Yeah.
He was beating people up. Beating people up bad. And, I mean, he beat a friend of mine. He really did. He hit him so hard. He dropped the only in the first round. Then he pulled ligaments in his knee and went down so hard. And Miranda's only loss at the time was a decision loss to Arthur Abraham because he got, like, deducted from, like, 5 points. And people were terrified of Miranda when he stepped in to play Tony Pavlis. And Pavlis came out and said, I'm going to walk right to him. And people were like, that's a suicide mission. The Pavlis walked to him, beat him up, knocked him out. Miranda was never the same. I can't count the number of knockout losses on Miranda's ledger since Pavlis broke his aura of invincibility.
All
right,
I'm going to get Randall Bickley here, the knockout king.
Got a record of 44.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Bailey.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron here. We got Tony the Tornado Pinnacle on us, on the line with us. And second Tom Patrick.
How you doing, Randall? Everybody doing? I'm doing good.
All right, well, obviously you got a big fight coming up here in June for the USBA welterweight title. What do you know about this guy you're fighting, Frederick Lawson?
I don't really know too much about him. You know, I know he's undefeated, and here he was my Pacquiao sparring partner. That's about it.
Well, I was just noting he's got over, I think, or at least a dozen fights here with against guys with no wins at all. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
What the undefeated record means when we've got that kind of. But nevertheless, you know, you don't take anybody lightly, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Now we've seen you in some big fights. One of the fights I remember more than anything is a guy we've had on the show a few times, Francisco Figueroa. You pretty much laid him out there. I think it was on Friday night.
Yeah. That was a great fight.
Yeah. I felt really bad for Francisco, but at the same time, you know, wow, everybody's the same. Wow.
Yeah. That was scary.
And what is your ultimate goal with this sport?
I really just want to get myself back in contention so that I can end my career on a good note, fighting some of the better fighters out there that I think, you know what I'm saying, match well with my style, that I'm pretty sure I won't have no problem beating.
All right. Yeah, I'm one of the lucky guys on my home game. He was there for one of my favorite knockouts of your career when you beat a guy in the NCAA about 7 years ago by the name of Demetrius Cabalos.
Oh, yeah. In Reading, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
it was real nice there, though.
Well, that was a great performance. I had taken a friend of mine to that fight, too. He'd never been to a live first fight before. And you remember that knockout. He's like, whoa, well, that guy was out. Like, yeah, he is.
Yeah, that was a great fight too.
Yeah,
I have been watching Demetrius Ceballos fight when I was younger. Like I used to go to the gym and watch him and Latigo, Wilfredo Rivera. I forgot his name, but they used to be in the 36 gym down in Tutu Zavala gym in Miami, and they used to be banging in the gym. And I used to just sit back and watch them and be like, wow. So when I got the opportunity to fight Ceballos, you know, I figured it was going to be a tough fight for as long as it lasted.
I remember the fight. And maybe that was a Mayweather kind of fight. And, you know, he was going to be round, but he took change when he was 18 on the ground.
Hold on. You're real low. I can't really hear you.
I would say, you know, Ceballos is a tough guy. I remember when he fought Sugar Shane Mosley for the lightweight title, and he was 89
rounds. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, he fought Miguel Cotto after me, and he went about 8 rounds, something like that with Miguel Cotto.
Yeah.
But yeah, Demetrius was a tough guy, man. He wasn't no slouch, so I really trained hard for him.
Now, who's the toughest guy you've ever fought, for your sake?
I would say it had to be Hector Lopez, because anybody I really focused on training for, you know, and I had the proper training. Fights pretty wasn't really that hard.
All right. And what is the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
Well, now I try to get a lot of rest, you know, and just train hard, stay focused, and keep my eye on the prize.
Now, obviously, your right hand, as I mentioned, knocked out at least one guy over the years, probably more. But what's your favorite punch? Is that it, or is it something else?
The one that land right.
And what would you say you love most about the sport?
I just like the combat. You know, I like to fight, and you know, if win, lose, or draw, if a guy is able to, you know, withstand everything I'm giving him, and he wins, then I take my hat off to him.
And how about your best moment so far, boxing?
I think it will have to be the Mike Jones fight. You know, being down on the cards and knowing that I still had the power left, you know, I wasn't really tired, and that, you know, that I could catch him and knock him out, which I did.
Yeah, I saw Mike only a matter of months before that fight. That was on the Was that the Pacquiao-Bradley undercard, the first fight?
Yeah, that was Pacquiao-Bradley one undercard.
Yeah, that's 2 years ago. Because I saw Mike probably less than a year before that fight. I'm sure that the guy did a lot of fights in the city, and he was at a card, and the fight hadn't been signed yet, but he knew he was getting a title fight soon. And, you know, we were just been walking, I snapped a few photos to put on our website. And I remember that fight. If I remember correctly, he threw a haymaker early in the fight and he missed. But it seemed like it scared him. He got real gun shy. Like I said, I saw Mike Jones fight live a couple times, and he never looked that tentative to me. But he looked tentative because he was, you know, respecting your power a lot. And then finally, when he decided to sit down and go for the title and win the title, he got knocked out of the country.
Yeah. But that's the only thing that I was worried about in the fight, as if I touched him a little too early, and he felt the power and he would take off on me. And I caught him in the first round with a grazing right hand over the head, and that kind of sent him on the bicycle right there after the first round. So I just don't like fights where guys just want to run around and don't mix it up. I get bored in the fight, and I really lose focus.
Yeah.
You know, but that's just my bad.
And I remember his trainers throwing him between rounds, and like you said, I know the guys that work the corner. And I remember saying to him, Mike, you're ahead. But then he was, I don't know, maybe he had a surge of confidence. I don't know. But they were 10th round. I remember he went down, he was at the last punch of the round, like 3 seconds to go, hit him with the right hand, and it actually knocked him back into his corner. It lifted him off his feet and knocked him back into his corner. And he teared a little bit. It looked like he almost got, like, he was mad. And he came out in the 11th, and he was trying to prove a point. And that's the tournament point.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm saying to myself, after I knocked him down and he got saved by the bell and the tenth, and I'm like, okay, if I know his corner, they real arrogant, They're real arrogant. I know they're gonna send him after me right now to try to gain control back. And lo and behold, they did. So what I did was when I went out, I threw an old crazy overhand right, and he dodged it, and he got a little confident with it. And I seen that he was tucking his head inside his jab when he was coming in, and I just knew that. Once I got him in the right place, let him get comfortable throwing it, I could slip to the side and catch him with the uppercut. And it just landed perfect.
Yeah, well, I don't think you would disagree with that. I mean, when he went down, he got up, you could see the blood pouring out of his nose. I remember I turned to my dad and I said, Mike's out. He tried to get up, and he tried to beat the count, but you could tell, equilibrium
gone. Yeah, I've never seen that kind of blood coming out of somebody's nose. He had blood clots and everything coming out of his nose. Yeah, that was pretty bad, And it's kind of sad because those kind of fights like that, a lot of people don't return the same as it was before they went in.
Yeah, it's one of the downsides of the sport. People always say, well, the worst thing is you could get hurt, but sometimes it's even worse when you see somebody else get hurt.
Responsible. that's a part of it.
I can remember that's what got me into amateur boxing in the first place, is because I got into a lot of street fights as a kid and myself what I could do. So I said, oh, I got to organize this or something. I got to channel this aggression. No, I never went pro or anything, so I learned to deal with all that stuff. Get it out.
Yeah, that was my angle too. I used to get in a lot of street fights, and I used to pass by the gym when I was younger, and my friends would always say we was gonna go in there. One day I was at home doing nothing, and I called up there and got all the information, and my mom took me up there, and it was over. It was over from there.
Yeah, that's how it happens for a lot of young up-and-coming fighters. There's nothing like boxing to give you a little discipline when you've gone a lot of your life without it.
Mm-hmm.
And the structure, too, helps a lot of people out.
No, it did real justice to me.
Now, how about who's your favorite fighter of all time, or fighters, and what about today?
I was never a real boxing fan, I like the Sugar Ray Leonard, I like this style, but as far as watching boxing, I was never a real boxing fan. But So when I got into boxing, I started meeting a lot of people, you know. When I was younger, me and Freddie Pemberton, we was like brothers. We used to hang out all the time, you know. And I got to train in the same gym with Evander Holyfield, you know. And then as I kept coming up, me and Trinidad got a relationship going, you know. And I don't look at the sports part. When I deal with people, I just deal with them on a regular level, you know. I really don't, you know, to glorify athletes, you know, even though I'm one, but, you know, I don't really look up to athletes like that.
And speaking of people you look up to, do you have any role models that helped you out, either inside or outside the sport, or both?
Well, I've been fortunate to have had three managers my whole career, and they was all great. It was all great to me, you know. They did whatever it took, you know. They would never tell me no, and you know they was like father figures, and they was hard workers, you know. They didn't inherit money. They started from the ground up, and they worked. You know, I respect the blue collar man.
And as far as you know, this next fight, do you have any strategy that you can talk about, or
We watched a couple of tapes. We watched a couple of tapes of them, you know. But you know, I don't see nobody coming in the ring fighting me the same way for everybody else. So you know, I wait till the first bell ring, and then you know, I pretty much go in and see which way the fight is gonna go, and then I'll pretty much put it together right then and there.
And you've been in the sport almost 20 years now, so you obviously...
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. We were just we were in the gym today talking about that same thing today.
Yeah, well, I'm going to beat you, but you've been in the sport for a long time, and you've obviously seen a lot. So what could you say about how boxing has evolved since you got into the sport?
Hey, it's like a turning table, you know. Every era is different, you know. When I was coming up, you know, we had I want to say a different kind of fighter, you know. Right now, I think the boxing game, everybody trying to get the big payday as soon as possible. You know, they're not trying to build their way up. They want to. They thinking they're superstars before they really make it.
Yeah, that does happen a lot. Definitely agree with that one. I think Psychic Tom might have a prediction for you.
Okay. Well, first off, Randall, congratulations on your career. I mean, you've achieved the highest of the highs. And for doing this for 20 years, I can only imagine the dedication and the work ethic you have. And I really congratulate you for that. And my observation is there's an old cliche that punchers are born, not made.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah.
Do you would you agree with that statement?
Yes, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and let me ask you, was there a point when you were first starting out that you knew that you really had superb power, you know, just far above average? Was there like a moment that came, or did you always just believe that you had that?
I think I've always had it because, you know, even when I was younger, I used to get in street fights. You know, that was one of the main things people used to talk about. And then when I started amateur fighting, you know, I could be losing a fight in an amateur, and once I land that right hand, the whole fight changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was crafting it a little bit more once I got in the pros.
Yeah, because I think that raw talent can only take you so far, and you can have a lot of God-given
mm-hmm.
gifts, but if you're not putting in the time
yeah.
in the gym, because yeah. as you know, as you start to fight better and better competition, sometimes there's always that guy out there that might not fall down. He hasn't read the script. And at that point, you've
mm-hmm,
got to use
mm-hmm.
more technique, rely on your conditioning. And obviously, you've made that transition, and that's what's great, because a lot of times you see guys that start off and they have that power and they don't want to develop anything else, and eventually it catches them. But I think you've avoided that
well,
trap, and makes me respect your fight IQ a lot, because you've learned that.
Well, I must say, you know, I came into boxing, I only had 19 amateur fights. You know, I only had 19 amateur fights, and, you know, a lot of it is just God-given talent, and, you know, I just learn on the job, you know?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, go ahead, Rick. Well, and then just one more thing, too. As far as your training routine, do you do a lot of the old school stuff, or do you like some of the newer things, too, like the plyometrics and everything, or do you kind of stick with the old sparring and the bag work, or do you kind of mix things up a bit?
Yeah, I kind of mix it up a little bit, but try not to stay too far away from the basics, because, you know what I'm saying? That's my style right there. The base, I could do the basics is what got me where I'm at. You know, they try to come up with a lot of magic tricks, and you know it don't work for everybody. And you know, if my jab is working, I know my right hand is gonna land. You know, you got me doing this and doing that. That's not gonna work for me.
Well, you know, there's an old cliche: if you master the basics, then you can worry about anything else, but you normally don't need to if you really have the solid fundamentals, because they won't let you down.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That's what it is.
Exactly. So my crystal ball is calling for a victory, okay? You heard it here first. Psychic Tom, I got that. I used to work on a psychic line. You remember the old Miss Cleo days, you know, call the psychic line. I was one of the guys answering the phone, you know, so... My crystal ball is shining
well,
real bright.
Well, you know what? You saying that just made me want to go to the gym and train even harder. Because
okay,
that,
man.
You know, that's why I don't really like watching too many things. I watch a guy for a little bit, but when it looks too easy, it never really turns out that way. So I try to ignore that and just go to the gym and work double hard. Now that you just said that, I'm up in the morning. I'm gone.
Okay, man, this is great. We can't wait to watch.
Thank you. I can't wait to put on the show for you guys.
Now, Randall, if you were in charge of, you know, all of boxing and you had full authority to change something to make it better, what would you change, if anything?
I think I would take away some of the belts. You know, I think it's too many belts, and it gives these fighters a lot of ways out, rather than fighting the fights that the boxing fans want to see. You know.
Right. Yeah, actually, we had Iceman John Skelly there on a few times, and that was his big beef with the sport too. And he pretty much went on for like a 5-minute rant on how many belts there are out there, and we were just talking about it, about your opponent here. He's got a couple weird belts. The vacant IBF International Welterweight title he just won 2 fights ago, and I was just wondering how come that wasn't on the line in this fight with you and this fight with Muhammad Kayongo, which was his very next fight. How did he win that? And then it's just never on the line again.
yeah. But, I just feel like with all the belts, you give guys a way out, you know. You know, they're not ranked in this organization. You're not ranked in this organization. They're not going to fight you because they're going to lose their slot here and that kind of nonsense. If there's one champion, everybody got to fight everybody just to make it to the top. You know, ain't no ducking and dodging.
All right. Was there anybody you want to give a shout out to or thanks?
I just want to thank my promoters. my manager, and I want to thank the promoter that's doing the show. You know, I can't really pronounce his last name. You know what I'm talking about, Tony. And Tony Greco. I think that's the thing I pronounced it right. Yeah, I just want to thank him for putting on the show. You know, they called me for the fight. You know, I was looking for a fight, and I'm glad they chose me. You know, and I just want to thank the fans that done stuck by me, and you know, I want to put on a good show coming on 7th.
Awesome. And if you want to provide any final thoughts or predictions for your fight, or even the Big Floyd fight.
Russ is going to win the fight by decision. I think McDonald's in great shape, and I think Floyd will just pretty much outbox him, you know.
That was our consensus, so, too.
Yeah. He just, you know, I just think he's at the point where, you know, he don't have to do nothing stupid like going up to 160 or fighting bigger guys, you know, because he is what he is. He's a small dude. So, you know, you can't make him go up and fight all these heavy guys that, you know, it don't make no sense, you know. If there's nobody in a division that could beat him, you know, let him fight. Just let him fight the next best. Let the people who earn it fight him, you know.
I'm surprised they haven't called him out to fight Vladimir Klitschko yet.
Who?
Vladimir
Klitschko.
That's crazy.
I actually heard a few months ago, in early October, right after Mayweather beat Canelo Alvarez, and that's when Bernard Hopkins came out for the first time.
And you said, Mayweather beat who?
Well, if Mayweather beat Canelo Alvarez.
Oh, yeah.
Right after that, Bernard Hopkins called him out. And
Yeah.
And that's usually after. Like, Hopkins said, to beat a master chess player, you have to be a master chess player. And I wrote an article. I said, could it happen? Would it happen? Would it sell? And how would the fight turn out? And I said, if Hopkins can get him to 160 without really damaging his strength, he's going to...
Nah, but he can't do that. He can't come down to 150.
But I said, there'd be enough money to play around, and they would be people interested, but I don't see the point of being as good, because each guy would be like, oh, you go first. No, you go first.
I think Bernard would be so weak coming down that Floyd would probably kill him. You know, that's just...
One thing I saw that would be the biggest, not fear, but if I was worried that it would be really apprehensive about it, that I would fight, not the Hopkins is a physical big guy, and even say he doesn't get that weak from coming down in days, say they go out there and fight, and it's a very lackluster fight, Hopkins knows how to
No, Bernard Hopkins is great, you know, but when your body is not where it need to be, all that is out the window, you know.
Sure.
You know, I've been fighting at 100. I was fighting at 140 since I was like 16 years old, and right now, I can't even think about going there. You know, when I get down to about 150, you know, that's my cutoff. That's my cutoff time. I go ahead and lose my other 3 pounds easy and coast on in, you know. Because ain't no more work to be done once I get down to 150.
Right.
Starvation.
Well, it's not really. I don't really have to starve myself, but you know, my muscles are not working once I get down that low. You know, and I'm not putting nothing extra on mine. This is all natural, so. You know, whatever the body says, time, to call it a day at that weight, it's time to call it a day at that weight.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Randall. How about a prediction for your own fight?
I don't really like to make predictions.
All right, good answer.
I don't really like to make predictions. I just want to come out and put on a good show for the fans. And, you know, when I come in the ring, I come in to do one thing, and that's a win, you know.
Sweet.
But I'm looking forward to a great fight.
Well, great. We will be definitely watching, and we'll keep an eye on you, and best of luck getting that world title back someday.
All right, thank you.
Maybe you'll be fighting Floyd.
Hey, I don't even dream about fights like that. I'm serious. my name is never just out of the blue to be on somebody's dance card. If they're fighting me, they don't have no choice.
Right.
Especially on that level, I'm telling you.
Well, if I could possibly get down to your weight, I wouldn't want to fight you either. So. Nice. Lost. But definitely great talking to you, and we'll keep in touch.
Thank you guys for having me.
You're welcome.
Good luck, Randall.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
All right, you too.
There you have it. That's the Knockout King, Randall Bailey, and one of our better interviews in a long time, I think.
I always enjoy talking to somebody that I saw fight live, even if it was a decade ago, because, like I say, I'm so young, I get a fight, and I see a guy there on the show, and even if it's a friend of mine, hey, you want to be on our radio show? Yeah, sure, why not? Give him a call, give him a phone call. That's cool, but I was in this schedule to guest, and it's somebody that I see fight live, especially one scored, like, a potential knockout of the year. And then I just said, yeah, I got to see him writing back 12 years ago against Demetrius Cavallos. He gave me a knockout out of the ring. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well.
But I got a question for you guys. I got a question.
Yeah.
I'm gonna pose this question to Tom. Tom, are you ready?
I'm ready. Fire away.
Okay, my question is, are you ready?
Ready.
And if you are ready, do you know what you are ready for?
Anything.
No. Are you ready for another stab at the literary penmanship of your favorite co-host?
Yes, sir. You better believe it. That's always.
Yeah.
I'll answer that question. Always.
I started working on it the other night, and I got a few things I'm touching up on it right now. I always like to think of a different way to intro into the article instead of,
mm-hmm.
We got Floyd Mayweather, the undefeated Supreme Fighting Champion, he's undefeated in however many fights, and climbing down in his career, and now he's just like Marcus Maidana. I don't like to be, you know, good playing like that. I like to, you know, these fights, they're not strictly mainstream, just to get a little bit more freedom to be creative. So, who am I going to quote to start this story? Bob Barton. Maidana won. Even the sweepstakes, and it's time to come on down.
Well,
yeah.
Said that, though.
Yeah. Yeah,
that his,
okay.
That was the guy behind the scenes.
Well, yeah. I don't care who it was. Yeah. I like it was Bob Barker. If I say it was Joe Schmo, people are going to say, who's that? If I say it was Bob Barker, they're going to say, oh, my God, yeah, Bob Barker, the place is right.
Bob Barker said, always be sure to spay and neuter your pets.
Yeah.
Definitely a quote. Now, we got a lot of boxing to cover. You mentioned Vladimir. Of course, he had a big fight over the weekend.
They had a couple cards over the weekend. And
if you want to
I
actually read a headline the next day that mentioned the fight, and obviously, you know, LaPai lost, but it was the first boxing story I ever read with the headline that said, poor Alex LaPai. Got beat by Vladimir Klitschko. Actually called him poor, like, poor guy. And I felt the same way, believe it or not. I mean, this was five rounds of lefts and rights, basically. you know, a few hooks mixed in here and there, but LaPai almost didn't even put a glove on Klitschko.
It was
like a midget compared to this guy, and obviously didn't have the reach to connect with a lot of shots, and Vladimir just looked like he was out for a walk in the park. And, it kind of made me go, wow, geez, maybe this whole deal with Shannon Briggs needs to be addressed soon, because I think he would give a better fight than most of these people Klitschko's been facing lately. Yeah, so I hope that she keeps getting in shape.
You know, you have to give LaPai credit for at least trying to bob and weave a bit and to try some head movement, but I'll tell you, if there was anyone better that I've seen in my long years that is better at finding the range and keeping the fight where it needs to be than Klitschko, I'm hard-pressed to think of anyone. I mean, he just kept dropping the one-twos, and it wasn't like LaPai wasn't trying, but you just started to feel, at least I did, I was starting to feel sore for him by the fourth round. I mean, you know where this is going. And, you know, I noticed that he had, they mentioned he'd been a truck driver. And then he pulled that upset, and then he was finally able to train full-time. But I don't know what that says about maybe the state of affairs of the heavyweights now. It's just not really Klitschko's fault, but, he's fighting who they tell him to fight. But
he should take it from that movie Over the Top and realize that the truck driver is much better at arm wrestling.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I mean, I hope he got a good payday for it, because he earned it.
Yeah, definitely. Our guest just a couple weeks ago, Bobby Gunn Jr., fought on Saturday also and got another first-round knockout, actually another one inside a minute, too, against Gabriel Smallwood. That was down in Annandale, Virginia, on the same card that was the main event for. And we haven't had him on as a guest, but we had, actually, I guess it's Jetter. We had, a guy badmouth him on the show once. I forget who that was, but... And we had Guillermo Valdez, who was his opponent. That was a first-round knockout for Jeter. And Oliver McCall is still fighting, believe it or not. Actually, he's never really taken more than a year off, which was shocking to me when I looked over his record when I saw him on the results here. But he just had an immediate rematch with Marcin Rykowski over there in Poland, and he probably should have had this one in the United States, because he had the first one in Poland and actually lost on one card, won on the other two, so it was a split decision, 8-rounder. Then that was when Rykowski was 12-0. Rykowski had one more fight, and then came into this one, so it wasn't actually immediate for him, but it was for McCall. And Rykowski came in 13-1, so he got one win under his belt before he went back at it against McCall again. And this time he won by a wide margin, all three scorecards, and was 91-99, 94-96, and 92-99. So pretty wide, and it was a unanimous decision there for him. But Oliver doesn't seem to be slowing down anytime soon or quitting. Been at it for a long time.
Well, he would certainly be. He would be an interesting guest.
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking to myself if we could get a hold of him.
You know, I don't know how we get on that rematch. We'd have to kind of
wait fight. How about instead of Floyd Mayweather, Bernard Hopkins fights Oliver at a catchweight?
Yeah,
right. They're both smoking Titans. That would be funny.
Yeah.
So that's that one. We got one more big card from last Saturday to discuss. We had Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman fighting Julio Diaz. That was a referee decision, I guess.
Keith was pretty good job. He took a few. I guess one of the body shots broke one of Diaz's ribs and forced him to retire on the series in the third round. This is kind of an anticlimactic victory, but I think Thurman would have had him out within another few rounds. He was catching him with some good shots. He's a good puncher. He was one of our previous guests, too, wasn't he?
Keith Thurman?
I'm pretty sure he was.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, I think so. But you know what? Actually, that's like... Lucas Matisse and Dan Molina. Great point. I mean, I thought Molina had him early. Molina had him down a couple times. He was hitting with some good shots. He staggered him. And I'm like, dang, Matisse made him down as good there for that Garcia fight. And then but Matisse kept grinding. And you could see him really wearing Molina down. So he finally had him hurt. The last few rounds, he covered him pretty good. So they finally stopped it, dropped it, and they stopped it early in the, I believe it was the 11th or 12th round. I believe it was the 11th. But the most interesting part of that was the argument. Did anybody catch the argument between Molina's trainer, Jay Beeson, and the doctor in the one round?
I did not see that. I didn't watch that fight.
Did you see them catch the audio? We even catch the video on YouTube. You got to see that. He had a cracked hand at one point, and Matisse had a cut over his left eye. It was a pretty good cut. And at one point, I think it was, it had been some head cuts, but Molina had a cut on the back of his hand. And it was pretty wide. It was really pretty good. It was all that going on the back of his head. And then I guess he had like another cut on top of his forehead. And at one point, Molina took a pretty good beating. They go back to the corner, and Houston really wants to get working on him and try to revive him a little bit. But he knew the guy was all the dumb. So the doctor comes over, and he's like in Houston's way, trying to look at the cut. And Houston goes, it's on the back of the head. And the doctor's like, shut up, I'm looking at it's on the front of the head. Houston flips out. He goes, don't you tell me to fucking shut up? Get in my fucking corner. Get, and he's getting him, don't you tell me to shut up? Don't you fucking ever talk to me like that? Who the fuck do you think you are? You can get off. Yeah, and actually, somebody has to restrain you and all the doctors look at him. He's an out. That on audio, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I think a little bit of the other Diaz there. Yeah. Last week when we were talking about Pacquiao, like, Joel Diaz, I think, was screaming at Bradley. So he wants to go home, but that wasn't that long. That was like 2 seconds worth of banter there, but it was still pretty funny to me. Obviously, it wasn't very funny to Bradley. Like, no, I don't want to go home. Also on that card, we had Omar Figueroa. I don't know if he's any relation to Francisco, but Omar beat Harry Belmonte by split decision.
Bad decision. I know the few there was a lot of criticism about Belmonte getting the title shot. He just asked him to do the best side fight. And I remember even reading the one guy that does a lot of writing that I follow. And he was saying that this fight was a disgrace. He said, not to get a title shot, they have other world-class opinions out there. And then Belmonte goes out to basically box Figueroa's ears off. And I remember, like, Figueroa closed the gap a little bit as the round progressed, but it was definitely a fight that should have been probably 8-4 Belmonte. And I just remember when they were going to scorecards, and it was like, judge number one has it, and I forget who they said first, Belmonte or Figueroa. I'm like, it's a split decision. I said, I know the Belmonte is going to get screwed because he's not the Al Haymon type of here. And then the final score was 18-110. And as soon as I heard the third score, I said, okay. I said, well, Figueroa got this one. And he got it. And not only did he not deserve the win, he definitely did not deserve it. One of the judges going to be 10 rounds.
Yeah. Well, I get lucky. We also had Frankie Gomez left it out of the hands of the judges for the second round knockout of Orlando Vazquez. He had Jermall Charlo beat Hector Munoz by another retired situation. I guess that's what RTD stands for. I always thought it was referee something decision. I guess that means retired, huh? Sharif Bulgaray beat Arturo Urena, also by knockouts, TKO. That was in the sixth round of their fight. Jarrell Gausha beat Charles Whitaker by unanimous decision. Joseph Diaz beat Maldonado by unanimous decision. Bryant Perella knocked out Robert Crespo in the first round, and Yamaguchi Falcao beat Fernando Nogueira by unanimous decision in the first fight of the night. Shane Mosley Jr. also fought this weekend out in Port Hueneme, California. This is his pro debut, but Mark Cordova knocked him out in the first round. So glad to see Shane Mosley Sr. not on any cards lately. The junior is picking up the slack, I guess, starting right off with a bang out there in California. And that's pretty much it for the old results here. We got plenty of new fights coming up to talk about, of course. And I mentioned that Oliver McCall just fought. Well, Franz Botha, another big heavyweight name. He's fighting.
That would be, I remember 20 years ago when he was training, he was about 30, and Jerry Truman was about like 33 or 34. They fought, and it was called the Jesus of Jesus. And then, you know, that was like the 30, you know, the 33-year-old. They never beat two guys fighting, like, whatever they are and whatever they are. Oh, my God, that'd be like Noah versus Moses.
Well, this one, Franz Botha is fighting a heavyweight fight over in Dubai, and even though the fight is tonight, according to BoxRec, he still has no opponent. Just got to be a BoxRec clerical error, because I'm sure, you know, when you put this kind of fight card, you got to have someone for the main event at this point. But he's 48-11, with 9 knockouts and 3 draws, and nobody really that special on the rest of the card. The biggest fight underneath that one is a 6-round super middleweight fight between Stefan Bozic, who's 28-8 with 19 knockouts, and Mikhail Kutsushvili, who's 34-21 with 16 knockouts, 5 draws.
He has no opponent. So I wonder if this is going to be one of those things where they have to get some volunteers from the audience.
Right.
You know, I did hear of a story. It's an old Teddy Atlas story about someone that was eating a hot dog, I guess. He was a fighter, but he hadn't, you know, planned on fighting, obviously. And through a whole bunch of weird circumstances, they found him there. And he actually went in. I don't know if it was a 6-rounder or an 8-rounder, but which I find amazing. Incredible story. I'll have to see if I can Google it and find out who that was. Yeah, he was sitting out enjoying his hot dog, and they said, hey, you got some trunks here. You want to get in? Oh.
Yeah. Well, that happened actually on one of my shows when I used to do Friday night fights of my own on campus at Norwich University. We had these two little Asian kids come out of the crowd and box each other, and even in pro boxing, I've never seen two guys hit each other so fast. It was like they were pillow fighting, because it was like both of them were, what's his name there, Mildred Taylor in his prime.
Wow.
Shoeshine punches on each other the whole time, and, you know, they were short rounds, too, so they didn't really get that tired. But it was actually one of the most entertaining fights we ever had. Friday night fight. The guys weren't even on the team. Oh, it's kind of funny. But then we actually had a story months ago, now that I think about it, of a Russian guy. I think I sent you the video. There was a Russian guy at a big show where they actually had a ring, and there was sand in the ring instead of a tarp or canvas. And this guy literally came right out of the crowd. They had to give him equipment. He didn't even have fight shorts. And he came in there and knocked out the guy that didn't have an opponent. So, it happens. I don't think they're going to let that happen, even if it's in Dubai. I don't think they'll let that happen with France. I think they'll.
No, I think Botha is a little too little too advanced for that. I think we may have a manslaughter situation there.
Also, we get Friday Night Fights tonight on Thursday on ESPN. Actually on right now. We've got Jonathan Gonzalez fighting Rogelio Medina right now. That's a super middleweight 10-rounder. Gonzalez is 17-0-1 with 14 knockouts, and Medina is 32-5 with 26 knockouts. The main event there is Roberto Garcia versus Victor Manuel Cayo. And Garcia is 34-3 with 22 knockouts. Cayo is 32-4 with 23 knockouts. And then we've got Unieski Gonzalez, undefeated, 13-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Jason Polomek, who's 14-9-1 with 9 KOs. We got two worth mentioning first. We got James McGirt Jr. fighting a 6-round middleweight fight. He's 22-3-1 with 11 knockouts. He's fighting Larry Smith. Looks like an opponent with a 10-21 record with 1 draw and 7 knockout wins. And we have Tony's buddy, Rogers Matagua, 27-16-2 with 19 knockouts. And Juan Carlos Velasquez, 11-1 with 5 knockouts. That's a super featherweight.
And what scares me is I think you're sending to Rogers in there now as a stepping stone. Then I'm going to go a few fights. He got beat pretty good. And I hate to see that because he's a good guy. And I hate to see that happen and to a guy like that. But his health is most important. And if he's able to go out there, able to compete, able to be healthy, then, you know, then he's got the right to continue his career. Now, you were talking about Victor Manuel Cayo a few moments ago. What was the record again? Can you repeat?
Victor Cayo. His record is 32-4 with 23 knockouts. All 4 losses by knockout, and that's it, no time.
Does anybody know who his first career loss was to when he was 24-0?
24-0.
He was 24-0 when he had his first career loss.
What?
By 6-round knockout.
Was it Floyd?
It was not Floyd.
Not Floyd. I'm going to have to cheat then.
You want to take a guess? You want to break up the crystal ball?
Well, it's not Floyd, but it's close to Floyd.
And it's funny, when you said his name, because I'm actually, I have the box track open right now, and I'm going over the pieces of my article as I'm writing it. See, I never write anything in logical order. I use a template, and that's how I write them. And the other night, I wrote about Maidana's three most impressive performances. Adrian Broner, Victor Ortiz, and Victor Manuel Cayo. Cayo was undefeated in 24 bouts coming in and had pockets of success using his boxing skills against Maidana. But he was unable to stand up to Maidana's pressure and power. A brutal body shot crumbled Cayo in the sixth round where he was counted out.
Cayo was also down in round two, according to Boxrec, on the body shot. Oh, no. That was Cayo. That was round two. But the sixth round was when the knockout came. That was for the interim WBA World Light Welterweight title. And speaking of too many belts, before that, Cayo had... it was called the WBA Fedecaribe Light Welterweight title. Heck, that means. And he also had the WBC Caribbean Boxing Federation Light Welterweight title before that. And what did he have to do to get that one? He had to beat a guy who was 3-3-2 in the Dominican Republic. So, sure that was easy. Anyway, yeah, so that's going on right now. And I'll have to keep an eye on that one. Actually, I have a fight listed here. It's really, one guy's 1-0, the other guy's 0-1. It's the only fight on the card, and it says, "This show is not sanctioned in big, bold red letters." Slovakia. That's kind of funny. So let's see what we got for Friday. Anything big? We have a Jesus Fighter of the Week card, but Jesus is spelled X-E-S-U-S. He's fighting for the vacant Spanish super middleweight title. That's not really one that worth mentioning, though. But we got a bigger Jesus fight here out in Las Vegas tomorrow night at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. And here's a big, big name. Jesus Marcelo Andres Cuellar, who's 23-1 with 18 knockouts, fighting Rico Ramos, who's 23-3 with 12 knockouts. That one's for the interim WBA World Featherweight title. Sorry, I had to let the cat out. And we had the co-main event there. Mickey Bay fighting Alan Ferrer. That's a big Freudian slip. Mickey is 19-1 with 10 knockouts. Herrera is 32-5 with 21 knockouts. And we've got a couple more good fights. Ishii Smith, 25-6, fighting Ryan Davis, 24-13-3 with 9 knockouts. Roche Warren is 10-0 with 3 knockouts. At bantamweight, fighting Ricardo Alvarado, who's 7-2. That's pretty much it there. Here's a good one from Argentina. Cesar Rene Cuenca, who's 46-0 at light welterweight, with only 2 knockouts somehow. He's fighting Albert Mensa, M-E-N-S-A-H, who's 27-4-1 with 12 knockouts. That's me. Really fancy on the undercard. Bunch of weird heavyweight belts on the line out there in Bolivia on Saturday. We've got the main event is Billy Wright. He's 43-4 with 34 knockouts. Fighting Saul Farah, who's 46-17 with 3 draws and 40 knockouts. And this is for, get this, the WBC Asian Boxing Council heavyweight title. Like, there's a hell of a lot of heavyweights in Asia. The WBC Faker Box heavyweight title also on the line, and the WBC Latino heavyweight title. All 3 of those. Also, the vacant Bolivian cruiserweight title is on the line in the co-main event between a guy who's 18-12 and a guy who's 4-6, 2 draws. Nothing fancy there. Then we go Saturday fights, other than Floyd Mayweather versus Maidana. Not too many. Everybody's probably building around that. Huge jumping out. The vacant world boxing in German version heavyweight title also over in Germany between Lefko, 30-10, 18. Levan Jormard Trevis, who's 33-13, is 22. A lot of belts. Arthur Ibrahim is back in action also this Saturday. He's 39-4 with 28 knockouts. He's fighting Nikola Zekloka. Definitely not pronouncing that one right. Zekloka, 26-1 with 8 knockouts, and the WBO super middleweight title is on the line there. I'm not telling that one. The vacant WBO international light middleweight title is up for grabs in Sinaloa, Mexico. Light middleweights Omar Chavez, 31-2-1 with 22 knockouts, and Daniel Sandoval, 34-2 with 30 knockouts, will be fighting for that one. Also on the card, Thomas Rojas, who's 42-14, with 1 draw, 28 knockouts, fighting Jose Cabrera, who's 22-3-2, with 10 knockouts. That's a super bantamweight. Not not seeing much else through Sunday here. That's pretty much it. So next week on the boxing front, we do have a big Bellator card tomorrow night as well. Bellator card is headlined by Joe Warren versus Rafael Silva. Warren's 10-3, Silva's 21-3. Also got Andre Korshkov, 15-1, fighting Sam Oropeza, who's 11-2. Marcos Galvo, who I've actually interviewed. He works with, Gabriel Gonzaga. I met him in Massachusetts in a fight. I actually didn't believe it was Gabriel Gonzaga when I saw him. Somebody pointed him out to me. Nah. Then I went over to him and asked him for an interview. Because I said, that guy over there thinks you're Gabriel Gonzaga. He says, I am. But Galvo is fighting Thomas Vasquez, who is 7-0. And Galvo is part of that same team. Gonzaga. He helps train Gonzaga. Also have Liam McGeary, who's 6-0, fighting Mike Musatelli, who's also 6-0, so some of these undefeated records got to go there. Dante Rivera, 15-7, fighting Timothy Woods, who's 6-4. Speaking of Jesus, we got Jesus Martinez, 8-5, fighting Ryan Contaldi, who's 7-1. And the rest of the fights aren't really that appealing, so we'll just skip those. As mentioned, Alex Lapai beat up Pika Klitschko. So we'll start at the top here with the news for the week. Tito Ortiz changed his not guilty plea to a no contest in order to avoid jail time in his DUI case out in Los Angeles. And he initially pled not guilty, but agreed to change his plea to no contest. In exchange, he was sentenced to 36 months probation in order to enroll in an alcohol education program. On top of that, he also had some fines to pay. Back at this, when this event happened, he was initially arrested on January 6th and was not charged until later in the month. But he actually blew a .12 on the breathalyzer after partying at the Playboy Mansion. I'll tell you, if I was partying there, I would have blown much higher than that. I probably couldn't have drove, I'll tell you that. Hopefully would have passed out there. Be nursed back to health, my brother. Well, he hasn't fought since July 2012. Obviously, he had that big neck injury that postponed his fight with Rampage. And he was 1-7-1 in his last 9 fights with the UFC. And now he's with Bellator. And he's going to be returning from a 22-month layoff at Bellator 120 on May 17th, their first pay-per-view event ever. And he's going to be fighting Alexander Flamenco, who's going to be bumping up from 185 pounds to light heavyweight. So, big deal. And then also, on the same front, the Tito Ortiz front, that is, Dana White has resurrected the whole boxing match deal between Tito after Tito kind of went off the deep end there complaining about how the UFC erased his history in the organization with their statistics on John Jones's consecutive win streak and title defenses. And Ortiz wasn't even mentioned at all on the list that they put up on the screen, even underneath Jones for his consecutive there. But, Dana White also said that he would have kicked the ass in a boxing match recently. So again, bringing that up, even though he never went through with that fight and blamed it on Tito not showing up for the weigh-in. And Tito had said something about, there was no money arrangements for the fight. And I think what happened was the Fertitas got involved in that. You know, not to show up. Ramping up to it like it was going to happen, and then at least, it's not going to happen. That was pretty dumb on his part, I think, and it made him look like it was all a setup. But anyway, we bash Dana White every week, so no. Just John Jones and Rashad Evans have had a little bit of a makeup session, I guess, back at the weigh-ins on Friday for the UFC 172 bout with Glover Teixeira. Jones was preparing to defend his title, and Evans was there to corner Anthony Rumble Johnson. And they had a little conversation, and Jones admitted to MMA journalist Ariel Helwani that he missed his former Jackson's MMA teammate. He said, "I saw Rashad, and I honestly missed him. It was weird. I just missed him. This guy was definitely like a role model in a way when I first started off, and I always remember looking up to him. Even though we fought, it is so long in the past now, and I legitimately missed him." Now everybody has to go, "Aww." But, it is now buried. The hatchet is now buried. And it is what it is. But apparently time really does heal all wounds. Vitor Belfort, kind of in the news lately, he's actually very upset that now that Weidman's injury has postponed the fight that he was supposed to have with Vitor, that he's now going to have with Lyoto Machida. Because of the delay, Vitor thought he should have been given the fight back. He said he released a statement saying he didn't have time to acclimate his body to a world without TRT right after the initial fight was called off. But after the Nevada State Athletic Commission altered their policy there, won't permit a TRT program, he pretty much dropped off the radar. But since that day, he's been pretty quiet. He was replaced in the fight, and then the fight was moved to 175 in July. After Weidman had an injury, Dana White actually blamed the media for Belfort's withdrawal from the fight during a media session prior to UFC 171. He said, "At the end of the day, the media got what they wanted. The media got what they wanted. He's banned. He's not fighting Chris Weidman, and the media got what they wanted. They wanted no Chris Weidman belt with Vitor." And that's kind of puzzling because Dana White's always said he's against TRT. So if you know, he's so pissed that the media inspired Ada to get rid of TRT, and he thought that was a good thing, you know, well, why not blame yourself? Look in the mirror, buddy. You advocated that same thing. I would think...
It's like the hypocrisy just keeps going, and I don't know, Rich, did you catch any of the show last night?
I didn't. I did watch the first two, but for some reason the free site that I get these shows from did not upload it, and I think I might know why, but we'll get to that later.
Oh, the pirate. Yeah, we'll get to that. But, no, it was kind of funny because Dana was complaining about the fight, and Daniel Spahn, he's a local guy. I've seen him fight around here in the NAAFS, and he was very impressive. And it was not the most scintillating fight last night. But Dana was on there complaining some. You know, he gives his commentary, and he says, well, these guys aren't listening to their corner, and these guys, we're doing all this wrong. And he was just so upset. But I'm thinking, okay, well, who invited these guys on in the first place? I mean, where's the quality control at it to begin with if you're that upset about it? You see what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's someone's job, because I know that, one of our former guests, Forrest Petz, on the second season of The Ultimate Fighter, he was down to the last cut, and then he lost. He didn't get the chance, and then the guy that they took over him came in at 190, and he had to fight 2 days later, and he wound up walking out of the house without even fighting. Well, where was the quality control there? I mean, this has been an ongoing issue since the early days of this. Whoever's making the selections, I would think Dana should get mad at them.
Yeah.
Or if it's Dana making the selections, because there was another guy from our gym who had tried out for it, and Dana's right there at all the tryouts if he's looking for personality or something. But so the hypocrisy is there for sure, and I agree with you on this one too.
Was that the guy that almost lost his first fight to get into the house?
Oh, no, this is going back to...
No, I mean this last episode. The guy who lost
the fight. Yes.
So Dana was complaining about him.
Right, because he's on Frankie Edgar's team. And he just had a lot of flaws. I mean, his stand-up was his only chance, I think, was on the feet. And Sean realized that.
And that's the design of the game, number one. Why he got into the house was because that's what happens. Like, NFL, any given Sunday, that's what they say, you know, any given fight, anything can happen in MMA, and he ended up getting a submission when he was getting his ass kicked in the fight to get into the house.
Well,
and that's how he crumbles. I mean, you gotta deal with that and to come to terms with that's what your sport is, and I think that's why, you know, having a guy like Ray Sifo in charge of the World Series of Fighting makes a lot more sense than having a guy who never even had an amateur boxing match and did boxer science classes. Running the UFC,
yeah.
You ought to have somebody at least advising you with a little more experience. But
because as I was saying earlier, it's awful hard to correct serious gaps and serious flaws. It's awful hard to do that in the short period of time. There's no knock on Frankie Edgar or BJ or any other coach for that matter.
These guys on this show. It is designed so that the coaches are trying to pick the biggest mismatch possible when they have the fight pick.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a system where if Joel Silva coming in and matching these guys up, you're going to have unfair fights and you're going to have people look miserable against somebody better than them. You know, even if this guy was more talented, it did put on, you know, a little better fight. If coaches still tried to, or his the opposite team was still trying to set him up with a mismatch. So, you know, if it unfolds like a mismatch, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. That's another part of the show, the way it's designed. I actually wrote an article about that in the live season in particular. There was a disadvantage to the fighters because not only did you have that factor, but you also had these guys had to fight 3 weeks in a row to get to the finals and then fight in the finals, and there was no rest.
Well, it's again, I guess I'm not sure of the criteria, but it was the black preacher who wound up losing. I'm being a spoiler here for you, but it was the black preacher, and he had a record of 8-3, but his ground game left a lot to be desired. I mean, just making some basic, just basic stuff. I mean, easier said than done, of course, but he just couldn't seem to... He couldn't seem to figure out what to do on the ground, and then the guy on top couldn't finish him off either, and so Dana was really throwing a hissy fit about it. But then again, it still gets back to that, okay? If there's that big of a hole in someone's game, why were they invited to even try out in the first place? So,
yeah. Well, at least he didn't get a bye like a foul. That was another thing I wanted to mention last week. Cathal Pendred, you know, it's a TH in his name. And you hear the guy say his own name, and he says it like TH, but everybody's calling him Cathal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this is a professional production. You should at least know how to pronounce these guys' names. I know it doesn't sound like a deal, but this guy's going to be announced someday in a big fight, you know, so you shouldn't have confusion as to what the damn guy's name is. And he was actually also in the news this week because he saved a freaking dolphin off the beach where he was running. He picked up a baby dolphin and nursed it back to health and pushed it out back out to sea after it beached itself. So, big-time animal guy, too, I guess. That was over in Ireland. I didn't even know dolphins went up that far north, but I guess they do. Anyway, as I was mentioning about Belfort, he's advocating for putting him back on that fight. He said, this is a curious thing. Actually, no. He said, I did all the tests that Nevada requires. I did on my own, and I passed them all. There is nothing in my system anymore. God has blessed me. I'm ready now, and I'm waiting. Since they canceled Weidman versus Machida in May, there's nothing else to do. Give me what is mine. He was also tested by the NSAC when he visited Las Vegas in February for the World Mixed Martial Arts Awards show. And at that time, he didn't even have a license to fight Nevada, but they, you know, they test fighters who have upcoming bouts scheduled, so they test him. And we never found out the results of that test, so that's part of the controversy. And they can't make the results public without his permission, and he made the decision not to make them public. So it kind of adds another layer to the whole deal. But when White was approached or asked about the putting Belfort back on the fight, he laughed it off. He said he's going to solve his problems with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. When he does that, we'll figure it out. He's got a lot of work to do. That shit just doesn't happen like that. You've got to get on the agenda. He's got a lot of work to do. He's fooling himself if that's what he really thinks. He took a couple of home tests and he's ready to roll or whatever he did. So, and as we talked about in past shows, Dan Henderson got the last DRT exemption in Nevada. And he has no problem. He hasn't had any issues with getting off it. So, no controversy there. Get back to boxing. This is a story that flew right under the radar. I don't know why we never found out about this until now, but Thomas Adamek has been in the news a lot for his boxing skills, but now he's in the news for a DWI he got when he was vacationing over in Lake Placid back in January of 2013. He was convicted in July of DWI and ordered to pay $1.635 Lake Placid dollars. That's probably $1,000 in fines and surcharges, according to the village court clerk there, Alyssa Patnode. And he also had to install an ignition interlock system in his car, which actually John Jones had to do too when he got busted for actually crashing his car. His license was revoked for 6 months in New York, and he was also convicted of an infraction for disobeying a traffic control device. At the time of his arrest, he was living in New Jersey. And he actually had to take an alcohol-related driver course as part of this decision there. And it happened when he was actually he lost control of his car while driving onto Mirror Lake Drive there in Lake Placid, failed to stay in his lane while turning, and crashed into an unoccupied parked vehicle, which pushed forward into another parked vehicle. Nobody was injured, but Adamek's car, which was a black 2010 Infiniti sedan, was extensively damaged. And though he cooperated with police, he refused to take a breathalyzer test. And his most recent fight was in Tony's neck of the woods, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, on March 15th, when he lost to Vyacheslav Glazkov in the unanimous decision. And they're actually saying this is going to impact Adamek's race for the European Union Parliament, which I didn't even, another thing, I didn't even know he was involved in politics. But that's what it is there, I guess. So stop your drinking there, Thomas. Maybe you'll get back in the election picture. And speaking of drug testing, which we just got off talking about, ESPN is reporting that the Nevada State Athletic Commission is implementing an enhanced drug testing program ahead of UFC 173, which happens on May 24th at the MGM Grand. And the first two fighters selected to take part in the new program are Robbie Lawler and Jake Ellenberger. And it's going to be the norm for all major fights in Las Vegas, according to NSAC Chairman Francisco Aguilar. Both boxing and mixed martial arts is going to happen. It lets everybody who is going to fight Nevada know that they have the chance to participate in an enhanced process, says Aguilar. We're no longer going to just test fight night or post-fight. We're going to test depending on how we feel as a commission. The new testing will include taking urine and blood samples as well as carbon isotope ratio testing. And it will be done when the commission sees fit with no advance warning for fighters. So hopefully that does a good job at policing the illegal or underground use of these performance-enhancing drugs. And on the same front, there was some news this week about Brian Stann reiterating that that was one of the reasons why he left the sport, was because of you know, all these issues. And he actually said, I think the time when you retire coming off a loss and then you say that, what I didn't want to do was discredit any of my former opponents, you know, specifically seeing that Wanderlei Silva was my last fight. I didn't want to come off like, hey, I'm making excuses. The only people that beat me were people on drugs. I don't know any of that for a certainty. There's one time when I fought a guy on TRT when it was allowed, and that's the only time that I could say substantially somebody was taking something, but it was a factor. I'm a clean fighter. I'm 33 years old, and I have seen in my own training and in talking and knowing guys in the inner circle, like knowing what guys are not on and when they cycle on it. And you can feel the difference in the gym and what a big difference it makes. And I do think that there are a number of guys who are using just because the testing currently by our athletic commissions is inadequate. Another thing that Stan mentioned is he was shocked at the amount of money it actually takes for a random drug test per fight. Average cost is actually between $35,000 and $45,000. Aguilar has said in the past that that just doesn't fit their national or the Nevada State Athletic Commission's budget. So these promoters have to come in and step up and help out with that. But Aguilar also added that I think we've made some significant changes in the last 6 or 7 months, and I think we can continue down that road, especially if we can make the cost of random drug testing more efficient. There's got to be a way to lean out that cost so that it can be done. So he's happily retired, though. That's another thing he added. He's not coming back anytime soon, anyway. And one of the reasons why I probably can't find the Ultimate Fighter online for free is guy just got busted. Well, not actually busted yet, but he's been sued. This guy lives with his parents, actually, from Staten Island, 27-year-old Steven Messina. The UFC is suing him for $32 million. And he's accused of being one of the Internet's most prolific pirators of pay-per-view events. And according to the suit, he uploaded 141 UFC presentations to controversial file-sharing sites like Pirate Bay and provided a PayPal donation link to keep the illegal practice going. And while Messina thought he was operating anonymously from his parents' home under the moniker Secludedly, UFC investigators tracked down his real name and location and avalanched him with this massive civil suit. And he actually advertised himself as the, quote, provider of best MMA and boxing rips online. And when he asked viewers for donations, he said, help me cap PPV. And they called it the MMA Capping Fund. So he was actually, he and his partners were intent on becoming the most well-known pirates and infringers on the Internet by making their mark on the major torrent websites available on the Internet, according to the lawsuit. And it's kind of funny here. Messina did not return a call for comment, probably because he's trying to leave the country. Last person I knew who got sued by the UFC, that's how he got off. He left the country. That was Ken Pavia. He used to give us a lot of our guests from the UFC circles before he got ousted for sharing some Bellator, sharing some paperwork from the UFC with Bellator folks. So that's, I guess, Messina's only option here. He doesn't want his kids to be paying this judgment someday. Because I don't think he's got $27 million, and I don't think he can afford a lawyer with his PayPal donations. That's going to be a lot of donations that are required to defend this. And the one thing I see being a problem here for the UFC is, you know, how do you get that judgment? How do you enforce that judgment if you get it? How are you going to track this guy down, even if he stays in the United States? You know, obviously, if he's living with his parents, he probably doesn't have a good enough job to make installment payments. So, good luck with that. But obviously, it's also a deterrent. You know, they're just putting it out there in the news and getting it filed and done with, so that people take notice and try not to repeat what he's done. But I don't think it's going to destroy any future pirating, except from this guy. And what you see a lot of times is exactly that. People go overseas, and the United States courts are really powerless in those situations overseas, like this, where, you know, a death or, you know, some real serious reason for extradition is not on the table in the situation. So I doubt that's going to, you know, be a major problem for this guy. If he even does get this judgment against him, he knows what to do. Fabricio Werdum, we talked about last week. He had a big, impressive fight there against Travis Brown. And not only will he be fighting heavyweight champion Cain Velasquez, but both of them will be hosting and coaching the Ultimate Fighter Latin America. It's going to include 16 Latin American UFC hopefuls, and they'll be crowning a champion in Mexico City on November 15th at UFC 180. And actually, for the first time in a long time, the coaches' fight will also be at UFC 180 in November. So that's going to be interesting. Usually that doesn't happen. And a lot of times, you know, the coaches will actually corner their fighters for that fight, the final fight. So that'll be interesting to see how they handle that. Obviously, one of their coaches might take over, one of their, you know, secondary coaches will probably have to take over those duties, since they'll be getting their hands wrapped and getting ready for their own fight. So that's going to be a big deal. Velasquez is the son of a Mexican immigrant and also has a brown pride tattoo, so obviously he's Latin American. Werdum was born in Brazil but moved to Spain as a teen, and also worked for the UFC Spanish broadcast team in the past, so makes sense for him too. And I guess the lone worry is Velasquez's health. He hasn't fought since October 2013 due to shoulder surgery and rehab, and his injury history has already cost the UFC a bout with Werdum at UFC 172 in Mexico. That can't be right. Probably 72, they mean. Maybe. I don't know. It says UFC 172, but we know that wasn't in Mexico. That just happened. Velasquez was unable to compete at that event, and the UFC scrapped its plans to enter Mexico altogether then, but now it appears ready to give it another go. So, it'll be a big deal. Let's see. That's pretty much it. So I guess Blog Talk Radio lady kicked in at just the right time. Oh, here's one story I didn't mention. Andre Arlovsky back in the UFC, which is very weird to me because, you know, usually it takes a lot of work and a lot of beating of really tough guys to get your shot back in the UFC. But the Pitbull was granted his World Series of Fighting release despite one fight, and he's currently in consideration to make his return against Brendan Schaub in the near future. No set date has been announced yet, but he hasn't really done all that well in World Series of Fighting. Actually, he lost a unanimous decision to Anthony Johnson. And he had a low-profile win over Jake O'Brien at UFC 82 back in March 2008 before leaving for Affliction. And he had losses to Fabianenko and Renat. And folded. Affliction folded. And he went to the World Series of Fighting. He's back. He's a big name. He's been around. He's got a lot of fans. He actually trains at Jackson's. And I remember hearing a funny story about John Jones during that documentary being sort of jealous of Arlovsky because Greg Jackson spends a lot of his private time with him, I guess. He's a good friend. And he's a cool guy to hang out with, I guess. But John Jones just couldn't be that cool, so he's kind of jealous. whatever. But he's back. So we'll see how that works out. And we'll be looking forward to seeing if that, that becomes a good decision or a bad one. Anyway, that's all we have for this week. And next week we'll have another guest, I'm sure. We'll be working on that in the next few days, and we'll get right on it. But we got to thank Randall Bailey for a great interview. And until next week, that's all we've got.
Well, gentlemen, I will have my TV to you probably within the hour. And I hope you enjoy it, and we'll see if I can, dig up the magic again.
Awesome. And I guess Tom dropped off already somehow, so adios, Tom. He's probably doing some psychic readings.
All right, we'll see how it's good. I'll talk to you later, man.
For Tom, I guess I'll say enjoy the fights.
All right. I'll see you, baby.
Good night.